This is an Island to Island production. I'm Ollie Walker and you're listening to Ironcast, the show that brings you discussions with craftsmen, celebrities, denim heads, retailers, members of the internal and extended Ironheart family, and well, sometimes people we just plain like. In this episode, we're talking to owner of Ironheart International, Alex Padmore. We talk about the delicacies of China, what a big buck is and how it's made, and there's an interview with Haraki-san. This is an Island to Island production in association with High Kick Media, hosted and edited by me, Ollie Walker. You're listening to Ironcast.
You're listening to Ironcast.
You're listening to Ironcast, and I'm listening to Ironcast on horseback.
You heard Ironcast, the podcast from Ironheart.
Reporting from the West Coast, you're listening to Ironcast.
Evam Adrisara Vachanam Shritavya.
You're listening to Ironcast, motherfucker.
Enjoy.
Well, where do we start? You're wearing your big buck. You're in the Ironheart flat. I'm jealous. I want to be there hanging out with you.
Yeah, it's gone quickly since you moved to LA, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe more so for me than for you.
There was a definite moment where my daughter Shiloh, when she was born, and that 3-month period went at about, I don't know, like minus speed. And then something happened around 3 months.
It's called sleep deprivation, I think, right?
Just don't know your name. You don't know where you are. And then everything just sped up and just was just lightning speed, dude.
Yeah. But yeah, I am in the Gosport. I'm in the Ironheart flat in Gosport, and I'm wearing a big buck. I just went to the Kalesch tannery in southern Germany, which was cool. I thought I should get a big buck to wear for the trip so that I didn't look like a complete twat, which I did, and I love it. It's very, very nice, although it does smell a bit fishy at the moment, but that is normal for the leather. It's tanned with fish oil rather than it just smells of fish for no reason.
For new listeners, can you explain the big buck to them, Al?
Yeah, so the big buck is an Ironheart pattern western shirt, but because it's made from deer skin, so it's relatively heavy, we use the same hardware that we use on our CPOs, so oversized copper snaps. But there's no pockets. It would be way too complicated to add hand warmer pockets. So it's a Western shirt with big snaps, made from an amazing deer hide that is tanned in a really old fashioned way in a place that I forgot the name of in southern Germany, about 2 hours west of Munich. And they are using like a really, really cool old tanning technique. So they started tanning in 1699, I think. And apparently, although this maybe is an old wives' tale, apparently the way that people discovered how to do this kind of tanning with fish oil was the old women would sit around a fire and chew fish oil into leather, and then they would leave it to oxidize and tan, basically. And what these guys have been doing since 1699, so they're on a river, they have a wheel that the river basically powers, and then that powers some hammers. So they take all the hair off the deer skins, using a variety of different methods that I don't know enough to talk about. And then when you have quite a flaccid, water-filled deer skin, they then want to dry it out. And then they take that when it's completely dry and they put it into a pit with some fish oil. And then the water wheel should do, although now sadly, due to climate change, there's not enough water, so it's powered with a motor. But back in the day, it would have been powered purely by the river. The water wheel spins around and it lifts up two hammers that just slowly bang, bang, bang into the pit, and that hammers fish oil into the deer skin. And they do that for a period of time, and then once it's absorbed enough, they then take it and hang it out for like 6 months to oxidize. And then from there, they do all sorts of like post tanning processes to make it a really, really, really soft, supple leather. It's an amazing hand feel, but it's quite medieval. Like walking around the tannery is pretty unreal to kind of I kept on feeling my shirt, and I was like, how the fuck does that become this? Like, it does not compute.
It's definitely, like, Ironheart is known for its toughness and its longevity, but the big buck is definitely an anomaly in the lineup. It's so smooth, and it's such a lovely thing to wear, isn't it? And if you're, you know, we all know that in this industry, it can attract some pretty anal people. And I would say that my experience with the big buck, they can be imperfect. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, definitely fair to say. I think any leather product, it will have some imperfections. Like, anyone should expect a leather product to have some imperfections. It's ultimately, it's come from a living animal. It is a living animal, or was a living animal's skin, right? So the big buck, perhaps more so, perhaps because some of the tanning methods are so old, and therefore it causes, I don't want to use the word damage because it's not damaging the leather, but maybe there's some of that. But I think the real kind of key things that you will see on a big buck are potentially scarring, and that's not scarring from the post or from the production of the leather, that's scarring that's happened to deer, or to the deer that the hide came from. Right. Obviously male deer fight quite a lot, potentially female deer do too as well, but to my knowledge, that's what antlers are for. There's also a type of fly, whose name I'm forgetting at the minute, a bot fly maybe, which basically lays its eggs into the flesh of deer, and then the eggs become larva. The larva like move to the liver or the stomach of the deer, become big enough to like want to get out from the deer, and then they basically just eject out through the skin. So you, in some larger deer, you see quite a lot of holes in the hides from that. Obviously, we're doing everything we can to avoid using hides that have big scarring like that. But that is just a kind of a fact of using deer hide. And I'm sure other types of hide as well. I'm sure it's not just deer that are affected by that fly.
Damn, I have absolutely no idea. It's absolutely revolting.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. It's like some weird David Attenborough sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was thinking more Ridley Scott, more like Alien. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like similar-ish to the... There's the fish... is it a fish that can fly up the stream of urine if you pee into certain rivers in the Amazon? You can do the rest, or picture the rest yourself. yeah, pretty grim. But yeah, so definitely some imperfections. Although a lot of the imperfections, having seen a lot of these hides, seem to be kind of more visual in a sense when you're looking at the raw hide. But then that... Or the natural hide, as sort of not raw.
Yeah.
But then we're dyeing our hides for these shirts at the moment. So a lot of that visible imperfection is gone. Although we are going to start doing some natural ones. So we have to be a bit more careful with that. But then ultimately, it's a shirt that you're going to wear. And some people may want to wear, like, keep it for a special occasion and wear it like they wear a suit or something. And it's going to be perfect. But most people who are buying our products are going to be wearing it like any other Ironheart shirt. They want it to age. They want the dye to fade. Excuse me. They want creases in the arms. They want it to look worn. And, well, I don't know about you, but if I wear something for a day, then there's going to be a mark of some sort on it, whether it's some food down the front or a scuff on the back where I've walked into a wall or whatever. Like.
It's if you've ever seen, if you follow Haraki-san, Ironheart boss, he often wears his black big buck, doesn't he? That's kind of one of his go-tos, isn't it?
Yeah. And it was in fact him wearing that to an Ironheart event. I'm trying to think when it was. Maybe 4 years ago-ish. He wore his really old one that he got in 2009, 2010, I guess. And it just looks amazing. It's like, it's not really black anymore. The black has mainly faded to brown. And parts of the brown, like the arm creases, have faded to the kind of yellow, which is the undyed side. Just looks unbelievable. And so he was wearing that at the main party day, and I think a lot of people were like, what the fuck is that shirt, like, we need that shirt. And that kind of prompted the phoenixing of this old shirt.
Damn. Just gonna break away from Ironheart talk right now. It's really, really cool. Alex and I, we were, when I was at Ironheart, when I was in the UK, we would often, Alex was my, I called him my drinking buddy, affectionately. And we would we would go to like very nice establishments. Usually if it was my call, it would be St. John. If it was Alex,
that's,
it would be some,
nice, yeah.
Oh yeah, some cool pub somewhere, whatever. But I'm drinking my morning coffee now, and Alex is drinking a beautiful glass of, it looks like orange wine or something. What are you drinking, dude?
It is orange wine, yeah. It is, I forget the name of the lady who's in charge of this vineyard, but it's it's the same person that did the orange wine for the party that you came to, Ollie, the anniversary party. Yeah. But this is nice because it is 9%, not 14%. So it means I can have a couple of glasses of wine whilst I'm talking to you and not necessarily feel trashed when I'm done because I haven't eaten dinner yet.
Dude, when I did Paula's episode at the end of season two, I have to say I could tell that about halfway through the podcast, me and her were like, yeah, so anyway. It's like, damn, we have to focus. Yeah. So that's a smart decision. Anyway, getting us back on track. So you might have the most British Airways points in the world?
Definitely within the Gosport region, I would say. Excluding only Giles and Paula.
Okay.
I think for the last year or two it's probably pretty close.
You've been non-stop, dude. Whenever I catch up with you, like I'm in China, I'm in Hamburg, I'm in Munich. Like it's been non-stop for you.
Yeah,
and not only that, but you've been buying a house.
Yeah, it's been a pretty fucking mental fall, as we say in America, or as you say in America. So we had the 21st anniversary party in Hamburg at Ironheart Germany, which was really, really good fun. Lots of good customers and podcast listeners came out to that. So that was kind of the start of the madness. Was essentially a 4-day bender in Hamburg. Limited sleep, far too much drinking, and German food, which is obviously quite heavy. So that wasn't necessarily the best recipe for the healthiest start to the second half of the year. And then, I went to China with Adam and Johnny from Obby Good Label, who is our Chinese agent for Ironheart. And we did a pretty solid tour of a lot of China in about 10 days, which was really, really eye-opening and very, very cool. And some pretty gross food as well all along the way, but some good food too. So we flew into Beijing. I'm going to murder the pronunciation of some of these. We flew into Beijing, then we went out to Tianjin, which is east of Beijing, I guess. And then we went from there to a place called Shijiazhuang. And then from there to Chengdu, which is in the west of China, and then back to Shanghai. And then we then finished in Hangzhou, which is near Shanghai, for 4 days for an event. So we had that was kind of the finishing thing, was an event for customers to come check out the brand, meet some of the people behind the brand, including Haraki, who came out for the last few days, and also buy some clothes. So that was super successful. And the trip all around before that was to meet up with a load of the retailers that we've amassed over the last few years with Johnny's help, who are throughout China.
So what was that experience like? Was it, I mean, did you have some, I mean, I'm sure there were many, many cultural shocks, but what was that like on a cultural level for you?
It was, I think maybe having been to Japan, which is extremely different, but closer than, say, England is to China, I wasn't fully shocked by a lot of the things. It's quite apparent that China is quite a long way behind, say, Japan in certain ways, although they're very advanced in a lot of other ways. Their bullet train system is faster than Japan's, perhaps by design. It's probably like 5 kilometers an hour faster or something stupid, just so that they can say it's the fastest one.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, for example, public toilets don't have enough water for you to be able to use toilet paper. So, and that's like quite that was very shocking to me, not only because of the smell coming from the waste bins next to the toilets where you had to put the toilet paper after using it, but also just like, how can a country the size, I mean, not, I don't mean size in terms of landmass, but China's a relatively wealthy country from a government point of view, you would have thought that they could have done something about that plumbing, for example. So kind of, mixed, and different cities felt very different. Some felt quite modern. One reminded me quite a lot of Shibuya or Hachioji in Japan. Other places we went felt very, very not like that. And kind of what I guess you would have expect, or I guess what I expected from going to parts of China, maybe the same kind of thing that I would expect going to parts of Russia, just quite bleak, very cold. Obviously, we went in the winter, that didn't help. Cold, windy, bleak. Everything looks closed because people don't seem to pay that much attention to the outside of their shops or restaurants or whatever. But you can go, everything is open. It's just kind of a weird, kind of ghost towny kind of vibe. And that's bearing in mind, we only went to large cities We didn't go to any villages or anything. So it was a big culture shock, but it was, I mean, yeah. Aside from the toilet thing that I just referenced, everything was pretty positive, I think. Yeah. I think I went there with maybe some slightly narrow-minded misconceptions about what it was going to be like, and I was pleasantly surprised pretty much across the board.
So this was for retailers. You were kind of essentially opening up, expanding in China. This was not about production or anything.
Yeah, so it's
not
really expansion. Sorry, I just talked over you. Not really expansion per se. We have been selling to a bunch of these retailers. We've been selling to all of these retailers for years already. We're actually globally not really looking to take on new retailers at the moment. We've got some production issues in Japan I've talked about a lot. We can go over them again maybe in a minute. But yeah, so this was more about supporting the existing retailers and just having some face time with those guys and seeing what would help them do better with Ironheart, if anything, what products they think would do well in their market that maybe we're not aware of or whatever. It's more that relationship building that we as Ironheart International have always been very kind of, well, we've always championed that process. Like it's really important to get out and meet people face to face. Like, yeah, you can send an email, yeah, you can pick up the phone, but it's not quite the same thing. And especially when you're basically asking someone to give you negative feedback, if you know what I mean, like you want someone to tell you, okay, this was good, but it could have been better in this way or whatever. Right. It's not the sort of thing that essentially a stranger is going to say to you over the phone or via email. But if you go out for dinner with them and like they've had a couple of glasses of wine or whatever, then maybe they'll be a bit more comfortable telling you something that's actually really important for you to know as the brand, right? Mm-hmm. So that was the main reason. And I would say it was pretty successful in that sense. Had really nice conversations with everyone, understood a lot more about the market. Again, going into the country, narrow-minded expectations of the country as a whole, also quite narrow-minded expectations of what people wear and what size people wear. Like I'm 6'4". I was expecting to tower over everyone. I was not the tallest man in every room that I went into. Like my waist size was on the smaller side of the average male. So all the clothes we took to sell, like tag 29 through 31, fucking sold none. Took a load of extra small and small, no, fucking none. So we sold enough to, like, at the end to kind of cover the cost of the trip, but it wasn't from a truly business point of view, it wasn't a success. Yeah. But that's purely because we took the wrong stuff, because we didn't really do proper market research. So that was quite interesting and amusing. But luckily we found enough small people to sell enough to cover the cost of the trip. So it was at least covered its own ass. But
I mean, I can understand that. I mean, I remember being in Malaysia the year was 2015. I was working in Malaysia and I went to Uniqlo and I was like, oh, I'll just grab a few larges. Didn't even bother trying them on. And everything fit like small. So I guess it's there for a reason, that kind of pre-understanding.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously there will be some people in China who are very small. Like there are some people in England who are very small. Maybe it's specific to the kind of people that we're seeing buying Ironheart. Maybe it's people who are a bit wealthier than the average person, maybe eating a bit better than the average person. Maybe it's kind of an aesthetic sort of thing, the sort of person who could look like an American motorcyclist or whatever because they're a bit taller than the average height or a bit broader than the average size or whatever. Is the sort of person drawn to Ironheart? I'm not sure, but it's not a case of everyone's 5 foot nothing and weighs about 30 kilos. Like that's very much not the case.
Interesting.
Japan, for example, I would say on average is a much smaller person than China, which I wasn't necessarily expecting. But yeah. You live in the United.
So you got to China and all these cool things happened.
Mm.
I have to ask the most obvious question. What was the weirdest thing you ate?
So the most disgusting thing I ate, and I would have answered this the same way before I knew what it was, because it was given to me before I knew what it was three penis soup.
Oh, come on.
Goat, sheep, and another animal. Penis soup tasted kind of like soapy dishwater in a less pleasant way. Looked kind of like soapy, cloudy dishwater. Was not. It came on the table. I was like, that looks fucking rank. Is that like a finger bowl? Are we about to get mussels or something? And then they were like, oh, this is like the delicacy from this part of town. I was like, oh, cool. What is it? And they were like, try it, try it, try it. Like, and it wasn't even like, oh, we're trying to fuck this like English guy up. It was more they were so super excited. I tried it. I was like, I'm sorry, guys. I really don't like that. And they were like, oh, okay, no worries. I was like, what is it? And they were like, three penis soup. And I was like, brilliant. That was good. Otherwise, I think just stomach. I had too much stomach. I don't mind a little bit of stomach here and there. I've ordered it deliberately in some Chinese restaurants in America before. But it's really, really, really fucking chewy. And the size of the pieces that you get given, like when we did the hot pot in Chengdu, like there's cows have multiple stomachs and this must have been the one that works the hardest. And it was cut into basically A5 sheets of paper size of stomach. And you just dip it in broth that tastes amazing. And then you're chewing for, I don't know, like 2 minutes.
Oh my God.
It still doesn't break down. Like basically all you're doing is just making the thing smaller in your mouth until it's small enough that you can swallow it.
And I'm swallow like,
what's the point?
Yeah.
It doesn't taste nice. It's not absorb, like it doesn't absorb the sauce or anything.
Oh my God.
It just has no flavor. Like it's not objectively bad. If it was cut up into really small pieces, it would probably be fine. You could probably fool someone that's kind of like squid that's been slightly overcooked or something, but Visually not great either.
Not great, right.
It's black and it kind of looks like the underside of an AstroTurf trainer, if you can picture that. Like the little bobbly bits.
Oh, God.
And it's like dark black, which is quite a shocking color for food in a lot of cases anyway.
Right.
And then it has that texture, and that texture very much translates to the mouthfeel when it goes in the mouth. It's just not very nice. I was sitting next to Adam, and I think he could hear me chewing through my cheeks, if you know what I mean. And like he was halfway towards reaching some with the chopsticks, and I just saw his chopsticks just recoil slowly and go for something else. I was like, yes, you definitely made the right decision.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, Crawshaw. We're talking about Adam Crawshaw, by the way. You probably, if you bought anything from Ironheart, you probably would have dealt with him. But he was your guy on that trip. But he, I mean, you've traveled a lot, and I'm sure you've had a number of weird things. But I mean, how did he fare? Was he struggling?
He surprised me actually, and I mean that with nothing but respect, because I wasn't expecting him to go in there and be a complete idiot and not want to try anything. But yeah. I was expecting some things to maybe be a bit too far out of his comfort zone. But I don't think there's anything that he didn't try. Which is all you can ask for. There were definitely some things that he was less comfortable having second helpings of than me. But I think our tastes were very similar in the sense that we both didn't really want any more of the things we didn't like. But I'm a bit better at kind of grinning and bearing it to try not to make the host feel awkward. That's something that I've kind of learned in Japan.
Yeah.
So I definitely consume more stomach than he did, just to take him one for the team, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, fair play to you, dude. I've still never eaten tripe.
Yeah, I mean, same thing, yeah. Basically. It's chewy. Doesn't taste all that great. It's like fucking snails, right? Snails are just chewy vehicles for the garlic butter that they're cooked in. Like, I feel like that's basically the hot pot in Chengdu, which is like Szechuan Red Bow or Sichuan hot pot, or however you want to pronounce the various westernized ways of saying the same thing, is just a rich, spicy broth that's in the middle of the table, and you just dunk any and every kind of meat into it. There was like coagulated duck blood that was weirdly okay, but it didn't look very nice. But like, yeah, like stuff. Oh, I've just remembered something. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Possibly worse than the penis soup actually is century egg. Oh my fucking God, those are so gross. I don't understand why people make them. They take an egg, remove the shell, so I guess it must be hard boiled. Well, obviously, I don't guess. Clearly, it's been hard boiled, otherwise, it wouldn't be fucking
right.
an egg, it would be liquid.
Yeah.
And then it's like buried in something, I don't know, I'd have to look it up, but they just basically like leave it for like, I don't know, a month, I guess. A century is the old wives' tale. Obviously, it's not left for 100 years. But the white of the egg becomes gelatinous and completely see-through and blackish in color, but still see-through. The yolk is, I can't even, like, it just, I'm not great with eggs. You know, I'm not, like, if someone's eating an egg mayonnaise sandwich in a train, I usually will move coach if I can. This was truly awful. So that was one thing that Adam was able to take one for the team,
okay,
for me. So I had literally smaller amount than my little fingernail.
Oh,
and he had
okay,
a bit more, so that was nice.
I'm looking Baijiu at it now.
Is another thing that Adam didn't handle very well, which is the Chinese spirit. Nearly made him throw up before dinner one night just by having like half a shot. It's so gross. It, like, strong flavor, extremely strong alcohol, like 60-65% alcohol. Strange. But yeah, so you got a photo of the century egg?
Yeah. The Baijiu, what can you liken the spirit to though?
Methylated? I'm not sure. It's unlike anything I've tried. It's much stronger than vodka. It has more flavor than vodka, but it's not necessarily a particularly pleasant flavor. It's slightly sweet and maybe a bit floral, but the alcohol strength is so strong that that kind of is immediately taken away from your mouth and you just get a strong burn. It's unique, I would say.
Okay.
It's hard.
Okay.
To, yeah, I can't explain it better than that. Adam very sweetly bought me a bottle in the airport as a housewarming gift, which surprisingly enough, I'm not drinking very fast. So next time you come to London, I'll make sure you try some.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you guys out there are into the spirits, but I have to say, I think of all the spirits, I enjoy probably a good tequila and a good mezcal the most. I think that's the most, mm-hmm, the depth of flavor. I mean, obviously bourbon and whiskeys are great, but I do like the mezcal. Madre.
Mezcal's amazing. That one that that you bought me, I forget the name of it.
I think it was Madre.
Is it Verde or something?
Oh, fuck. Oh, shit. Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't know.
I think it's, yeah.
Mezcal is good. Mezcal is one of my faves. Significantly better than Baijiu. Sorry to any Baijiu lovers that are listening.
You were absolutely right. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck I was talking about. Madre. Verde. That's how it was spelt in my brain, clearly. Verde. Yeah, Verde. If you're into Mezcal, Verde is great. So there you go. A little recommendation from me now. Okay, so I'm going to have to move on to talk about that dreaded subject, which is production.
Yeah, so production is slow, very slow at the moment. So there was a big issue in Japan. I'm going to try and talk about this relatively quickly because I have talked about it a lot on the forum, I think on our last podcast or whatever, but just to summarize again. Factories in Japan are staffed by Japanese and non-Japanese workers, or were staffed by Japanese and non-Japanese workers. A combination of COVID and the Japanese economy not being quite as strong as some other countries, or not growing quite as much as some other countries around it, has meant that a lot of the non-Japanese workers have left Japan and have no intention of coming back because they can earn, although everyone in our factories is paid very fairly, the national wage, like minimum wage, average wage, whatever in Japan is not really going up. Whereas in other countries around it is going up. So although all of our workers are paid more than minimum wage in Japan, some of those people are finding they can earn more money, say in China, say in Indonesia, whatever. And a lot of those workers were from those two countries and a handful of others. And it's a hard thing to move to another country and leave your family behind and send all your money home to support your children. So even if they're earning 10% more in Japan than they could in, say, Indonesia, but they had to leave their kids at home, you can understand why maybe those people would take a small pay cut to not have to do that if the wages in Indonesia went up and the wages in Japan didn't. So there is a bit of a shortage of staff. That's one problem. Another problem is the Japanese economy is pretty fucked. So buying things as a Japanese person from outside of Japan is way more expensive. So for example, Ironheart jeans are made with American cotton. So all of the cotton that Hiraki is having to buy or the mills are buying or whatever, that is turned into denim is costing way more. So denim is costing more. Factories want to charge more because they have fewer staff. The whole thing is, it's getting complicated. So we're trying really hard to balance cost. We don't want to charge more than we absolutely have to for our clothes. That's always been something that has been important for Ironheart. In fact, we've dropped prices on clothing frequently in the past. Like a good example would be 25-ounce jeans. The price of those is $50, maybe lower now than it was when they first were released, because the scale of economy has grown. And as we started to get better discounts from the factories, we passed those on to the customer. So we're not trying to increase our prices if we can avoid doing so. So we need to be quite cognizant of what we're doing in the factories rather than just throwing more money at them to fix the problem. We're also trying to make sure that the factories that we work with are busy with Ironheart and not taking on orders from other brands, because that just puts us to the back of the queue. But we're also trying really hard not to break the factory's production line by just throwing too many orders at them. Mm. So it's a constant kind of round and round process where there's a problem. I'll go out to Japan, we talk about the problem, we find a solution for the problem. Then a month later, there's a new problem, which is caused by the fix for the first problem. And then it just goes round and round. So we didn't have enough people in the jeans factory QCing jeans. So we managed to get like kind of a coalition between our jeans factory and our shirts factory, so that the shirts factory QC team could QC jeans for the jeans factory. Damn. So that was a really good fix for a while. And then they ran out of storage. So then we rented additional storage, but then that got filled up too quickly because of the backlog. And then we have to find something else. And then denim, like making jeans takes longer than weaving denim. Sorry, the other way around. Weaving denim takes longer than making jeans. So then we need more looms making Ironheart so that we can give the factories more denim. But then what happens when there's a backlog? We don't have anywhere to store the denim. So we have to look at additional storage for that. Everything is quite complicated and nothing is a simple fix. So we're trying very hard to fix the problems, but we're not succeeding in fixing them quickly. And I think most people listening to this will be familiar with more than just Ironheart, and they will see that this is a problem throughout Japan, not just one for us. And what we're really carefully trying to do is ensure that the factories that we work very closely with stay in business, keep making products to the best quality they can, and delivering them in as high a percentage of the ordered volume as possible without losing any to QC. And after a certain point, you have to stop pushing, because if you keep pushing someone who's close to breaking, then something will break. And if the quality of the product is the thing that breaks, then we lose one of our kind of key USPs or one of the key parts of our ethos. So I would rather something takes a few months longer and it comes out perfect than we receive a huge batch of 634S and they're all fucking shit for whatever reason. So it is super frustrating. Like, I hear people complaining about it every day. Trust me, it's really fucking frustrating for us too, because we want to be selling more stuff just as much as you want to be buying it. But I think the way we're trying to the way we're trying to deal with it is the most sensible way, and the way that is the most likely to protect the quality of the brand and the image of the brand. So I just ask people, A, to be patient, and B, once they've listened to this, to stop asking until we've got another update, because the answer's not going to change, but we are trying.
Until you see the section of the website that says new arrival and the thing that you're asking about is in new arrivals. How about that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we obviously want to tell people when something is about to come out, right? Because we want you to be excited about it and we want you to buy it from us. So we will announce it. But yeah, I don't mind people asking like, hey, when's the restock of this coming? Or when's the restock of that coming? Or whatever. Like, that's normal. I enjoy seeing that more often than not. But don't complain that the pair of jeans that you've been looking forward to getting for the last 6 months is still 6 months away, because trust me, if there was anything we could do to secure a better supply of our genes, we would have already done it by now. And save moving some production to another country, which is not something that we're interested in doing, to be clear, there is no quick fix. And it's a consistent issue with all brands in Japan. I say all brands, obviously I don't know all brands, but all brands that I have spoken to or that I have heard people talk to and feedback to me or whatever are struggling with the same thing. And that's coming from someone who just spent a few days in China surrounded by Japanese bosses of similar brands to Ironheart, many of whom we talked about this issue with. And everyone who was at that event is struggling with exactly the same thing. And there were some really big names there as well as Ironheart.
So in that vein, I think it's probably an appropriate time to ask you when I'm going to be able to buy a new pair of 21-ounce 1955s.
They are coming soon.
Oh, is that real?
That is real. I will give you a more useful answer, though. All 21-ounce, including 1955s. I know it was a joke, but now I've started looking.
Okay, fine.
Should be coming really soon. Like, they were due in November. All 21-ounce jeans were due in November. So obviously, they're not coming in November because it's now, I don't know, what is it, the 11th of December or something?
Yeah.
But they are coming. This is making really shitty radio, me looking at a spreadsheet and not finding what I'm looking for.
Sorry, this is what I can do
in December. They were due in December, or are due in December. So I would say maybe February, based on the delays that we're seeing on other things that were due in October or November that haven't been delivered.
Nice. Well, I'm still wearing them, and I'm still loving them, and they're still the best thing in the world. So do you think that... Do you think that now is a good time to drop the Hiraki interview that we did?
Yeah, absolutely. And then should we do some... I think you've got a few questions from the forum for me. Should we do Hiraki and then do mine, and then we can go back to normal combo?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that sounds like a good way to do it. So, guys, we were trying to get you a Hiraki interview probably since season one, but we just couldn't really see a way to make it happen. It was just going to be too clunky. There was just going to be so much room there. And we thought, okay, we'll do it for season one. Couldn't do it. Thought about it for season two. And then we just thought, okay, let's just get a set of questions together and let's kind of do it through all these channels. So Alex worked very, very, it was a good thing. I essentially asked you guys on the forum to send me some questions you had for him. Alex delivered them to Serena, I think. And then he answered them on his iPhone. Now, just to limit your expectation, it's not a very long interview. I think we got it to about 4.5, possibly 5 minutes. But yeah, thank you for your questions, guys. I'll drop that interview in now, and we'll catch you on the other side. Okay, the first question is from Nick. What is the most important design feature of Ironheart?
Balance, ですね。各部の、パーツの位置や大きさとか。を着た時の使いやすい位置でありながら見た目もすっきり見えるそんな、バランスを重要視してます
The balance is key. The location of each part, the size, the cut. When you wear it, you want it to function and look wearable and chic. That overall balance is very critical. Second question from Crispy Heron. What Ironheart item are you most proud of?
IH634S21オンスサルビッチデニムのストレートカットですね。
That would have to be the IH634S 21 ounce salvage denim straight cut. Question from Ed H. Is there a product you want to make but can't for whatever reason?
ありますよ。ニットアイテム、例えばカウチンセーターとかアランセーターとか、毛糸を使うアイテムが、やりたいと思いながらもまだ実現できていません。
Absolutely. I've been wanting to do it, but haven't made it a reality just yet. I'd love to produce a knit, such as a Kawachan or Aran sweater. Chunky, thick knit pieces using wool yarns. From Salted Racer. When did you start riding motorcycles, and what are your favorite bikes?
興味を持ったのは15歳ぐらい。で、実際毎日乗るようになったのが23からですけども、それから44年。ほぼ毎日のように乗り続けています大好きなバイクはいろいろあるんですけども結局ハーレーに落ち着いているので多分ハーレーダビッドソンが一番好きなんでしょうね
I gained interest in biking culture around the time I was 15 and started riding daily around 23 and have been for about 44 years since. Although I have many favorite bikes and brands, of course, my all-time favorites are Harley-Davidsons. Okay, this one's from Wefty Yarn. Do you ever have days off from Ironheart? And if so, how do you like to spend them?
休日は月に2回ぐらいはあります。その日は朝からだいたいそうですね、何度もコーヒーを入れて、ゆっくり、庭のデッキの椅子に座って飲みながら、頭の中ではあれこれ、あれをこう作りたいとか、こんなものをこうしたいとかしたいとかっていうふうに、まあ、妄想に近いものを、ずっと考えてますね。ほぼ、服かもしくはバイクのカスタムとかそういうことを考えながらぼっとするのが私の休日です。
I take some time off, around twice a month. Starting in the morning, I make some coffee and slowly enjoy my day. I enjoy sitting in my chair on my deck in the yard, constantly contemplating ideas of things I want to make and things I can do and which ways I want to execute them. The thoughts are really fun and leisurely, mostly about clothing and custom bike builds. Question from Scarf Mace. What other brands inspire you?
アメリカの昔からあるワークウェアのブランドですね、カーハーターとか、リーの一部とか、その辺が、自分のベースですし、他にもアメリカのミリタリーウェアが基本的にはいろんなアイデアの元になっています。
I really love heritage American workwear brands that have a rich legacy, such as Carhartt or a portion of Lee's collection.American military brands also give me a source of inspiration as well. It's in the same vein as Ironheart. This one's from me. What was the item that made you fall in love with clothing?
きっかけになった服は多分14、15歳の頃だったと思うんですけど、日本で紹介された IB スタイル、アメリカの、カジュアルな部分、もしくは、トラディショナルなスタイル、その辺の中のボタンダウンシャツとかコットンパンツとか、初めて日本に紹介されたんですけども、その辺が一番自分にとっては、服好きになったきっかけのものだと思います。
The turning point for me was when I was 14 or 15. There was a trend happening in Japan for the American Ivy League traditional aesthetic, where button-down shirts and cotton pants were introduced to me for the first time. It's what made me fall in love with clothing. And finally, how did you feel when you discovered that so many people in the West love your brand?
恥ずかしいような嬉しいような、誇らしいようなとにかく、最高にハッピーな気持ちです。
It's a mix, honestly. It makes me feel embarrassed, satisfied and proud all at the same time. Ultimately, it makes me incredibly happy.
以上です。
Okay, so there was the Haraki interview. Hope you loved it. Hope you got everything you wanted to get out of it. And thank you again for your questions. Now, I also asked you guys on the forum if you had any questions for Alex and possibly even myself. And all right, let's do that now. Are you ready for your quick fire 10 questions?
Yeah, let's go.
Some of them are quite silly. Okay, so Carol wants to know more about your time diving. Maybe some of your favorite contemporary diving locations and why.
Brief summary. I started diving when I was about 12, 13. Junior scuba diver, I think, was the qualification I got with my mum on a holiday. And then me, Giles and Paula went away to the Bahamas. We all did open water together. I then started working as an intern at that same resort in the Bahamas, which incidentally is where I met my wife. Did dive master, all that sort of stuff. Came home, went to university, dropped out of university, and then ended up in commercial diving, which I talked about in quite a lot of detail in episode whatever of season one, two, maybe. So definitely listen to that if you didn't, or if you haven't already listened to it. In terms of contemporary diving, Carol, you're going to be very disappointed with my answer because I have not dived anywhere recently apart from the Bahamas, where my wife and I go back to quite often, mainly because I haven't been on a kind of beachy type holiday anywhere other than there for quite a few years. Lots of places I'd love to go diving, just haven't got around to it. And as we talked about at the start, I do a lot of travel for work, so it's quite nice to go back somewhere that feels like home, which is Andros Island, Bahamas. and do absolutely fuck all. And sometimes I don't even dive because it's nice just to chill. I haven't dived in England for a long time. Did enough cold water diving to not really want to do any diving in England, but I would quite like to check out some diving maybe in Scandinavia or something where there's some better visibility, and there are obvious other places like in Asia and in South America and stuff.
Nice. So thank you for that, Carol.
So that was not Matt, very quick fire answer as well, sorry.
So Matt wants to know, I mean, Matt, come on, man, but whatever. Matt wants to know if you go to the nude beaches in the Bahamas.
I can do this one real quick fire.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, next question.
But there are no nude beaches in the Bahamas, to my knowledge, but you will find me nude on the deck of my wife's house quite often when I'm just chilling. But yeah.
Yeah.
No nude beaches.
Nice. Very nice. Okay, JIV. He wants to know your favorite Ironheart piece, the one you will wear to the end. That's me paraphrasing his question.
That is a tough question. I actually... I'm not good at representing that kind of person within the brand. I have quite, I wouldn't say my taste changes. I still always like the same thing, but I do kind of get a bit bored of the same shirt or the same jacket after a while. So I have quite a high turnover of, particularly of tops, just because I quite like reaching for something new. So I tend to either re-love my old stuff now or used to sell it on the forum. My favorite stuff right now, NE634 jean. I'm wearing 19Ls at the moment, but I probably would say I wear black jeans slightly more often. So 634 SSB. I definitely need some SBGs when they come. But yeah, 634 on the legs. Favorite top right now is probably the Big Buck because it's unbelievably comfortable. Bit of a cop-out, but my black hoodie is probably the thing that I have worn the most and don't get rid of. So comfortable, so warm. Yeah, pretty perfect. Probably the best hoodie ever made. I might be biased.
I think you're right. Is it a zip or is it a pullover?
Just pullover, mate. Just like that. And yeah, like if you're at home with some sweatpants, like you're good. Yeah. You can like put a jacket over the top and you're smart enough to go for dinner unless you're going to a fancy place. Like it's just pretty perfect, right?
Solid. Yeah, love that. Okay. So JIV again, he wants to know, oh, come on, man. If you have pineapple on your pizza...
Only fucking psychopaths have pineapple on their pizza. That is a hard no. And Ollie is raising his hand with an embarrassed smile right now. Did you watch the thing?
We did read
these questions yesterday, which makes it even more embarrassing that I don't have a good answer to the last question. But I was saying to Ollie, there's a prank that some Italian kids played in Napoli where they basically stole the pizza delivery phone. And instead of delivering like Neapolitan pizzas, which is basically a margarita, I believe, they delivered Hawaiians, and it is fucking hilarious. You see like these old, like old grandmas that you wouldn't like assume could be horrible at all, like open the window, screaming at the kids, throwing the pizza box back at them, like, what the fuck is this? Like, we don't know, like no one puts pineapple on pizza in Italy, you fucking morons, blah, blah, blah. Very funny. Check it out. It's probably on YouTube.
I'll put a link to that in the description for the podcast. Okay, so moving on, Ms. Mazel. He asks me a question. What am I up to professionally in LA? Quite simply, bro, I moved over here because we were pregnant and my wife had an amazing work opportunity. So I'm doing voiceovers, I'm doing the podcast, and maybe a little TV and film at some point. But in the interim, because there's been a strike, I've been working at Snake Oil Provisions, which they are looking after me, and all is absolutely fine. Moving on. Question 6. Ms. Mazel also asks, Ollie. No, that's me. Ms. Mazel also asks, Alex, fucking hell. Did you have a denim obsession before Ironheart like Giles?
No, I did not. I mean, I always wore jeans. I feel like pretty much everyone always wore jeans at some point, but I wouldn't say I was obsessed by jeans or that I particularly cared about the denim scene. I just liked wearing jeans. I remember when Dad gave me a load of his old Levi's. I thought that was pretty fucking cool, as in not the giving, although that in itself was cool. But I remember thinking those jeans were pretty fucking cool. And I mean, yeah, I've been around Ironheart since I was a child, remember? Like, Dad started Ironheart a long time ago. So I've grown up watching it grow, watching him grow it, watching the boxes coming into the house go to boxes going into the office. So I haven't I didn't have a denim obsession, but I've always been interested in, too obsessed with Ironheart at various different stages and progressions throughout my life because of the proximity that I've had to it.
Okay. He also asks, where do you see Ironheart in 10 years?
I mean, that's a tough question because the honest answer is pretty boring. Like, we don't really want to change a great deal of what we're doing. I think we already make some of the best, if not the best, clothing in our kind of genre from Japan, if not in the world. So there's no real interest to change that. There's no real interest to chase trends or anything. So where I see us in 10 years, hopefully pretty much where we are now, maybe a little bit bigger, so that we can employ some more people, because one of the favorite parts of my job is hiring great people and working with new people. So my only real thirst for growth would be so that we can reach more people with our product and that we can touch more people locally, like in terms of employment or whatever. I don't have like these kind of crazy growth plans for Ironheart. Like in 10 years, I want to be the next Levi's or whatever. That's not our vibe. And I think it was Ms. Mazel who asked this question, who I've met in Denver. He's been around the brand a lot. He's on the forum a lot. He's met me. I hope that nothing that I've just said is surprising to him or to anyone else listening to this. Like, we're not here trying to be the next big high street brand. That's not what the brand has ever been about. It's not what it's ever going to be about.
Nice. Okay, we're going to go over to Scarf Mace. He asks, how does it feel to have full control of Ironheart and its future?
Fucking scary sometimes. It feels good. But honestly, it is scary. It's a lot. All of the things I just said in answer to Ms. Mazel's question, I can spin around and say in a negative way. It's really fucking scary having a lot of people that rely on you and your decision-making for their income and everything else that goes along with employing people. It's scary making decisions like, did we release the right line for spring summer? Like, obviously Haraki is designing the line, but he takes input from Ironheart International. He always has. He continues to do so. Are we choosing the right pattern? If we see 10 UHF patterns and we narrow it down to 5, do we get the right ones or did we get the wrong ones? Like, all of that sort of decision making is really stressful and really scary, but it's exciting. And I think the positive elements of all of that outweigh the negative, but I would be completely full of shit if I said that there weren't days that were scary and pretty horrible. But overall, it's pretty awesome.
Love that. Okay, let's move on to the next one, which is another one by Scarf Mace. He asks, what choices did you make that would have received pushback in the past?
So that's a tough question. I thought about this overnight because it's a tough question. I honestly, this is a bit of a cop-out, but I can't think of a good example because the transition has been quite seamless on my side. Jars may disagree with that because I think it's probably more difficult for him taking a step back than it is for me taking a step forward. But a good example of something that did happen before the sale of Ironheart, which kind of answers the question, is or was our post-Brexit decision making. So I strongly believed that we should have opened a small warehouse somewhere in the EU quite soon after we realized how damaging Brexit was for our business. And Giles and Paula strongly disagreed with that because there was a lot of risk. There was a lot of unknown, all of the things which prompted us to kind of go in the way that we've gone, which is that they didn't want to hold back potential growth or correct decisions by them wanting to protect their future for essentially, right? And I'm not saying that I was right by talking about this, but that is a good example of something where I thought that we should go this direction and they thought we should go another direction. And ultimately, we went their direction because it was their decision to make. Was it the right decision? Who knows? It's not going to change right now. But that's a good example of one of the clashes in inverted commas. It never got particularly heated, but that was a clear example of a difference of opinion that now no longer would have been, or that now no longer would be in place, right? But I haven't got a good example of a current one, and I didn't say any of that to perk the hopes of the European customers up. We're not looking at opening a warehouse in the EU right now, sorry. And I also wasn't trying to drag up shit. Like I said to one of our German retailers, there's no point crying over spilt milk. To which he replied, I'm lactose intolerant.
Zing. Love it. All right, we've got the final question, and it's from Brian. And he asks, are you proactive or reactive about finding retailers, and do they have to go through a vetting process?
A bit of both. I think Giles answered this on the forum, although I don't fully agree with what he said, although the kind of main point of what he said is absolutely true. Reactive in the sense that I'm constantly looking online at other shops that do similar things to us, so that I'm usually aware of names of stores when they reach out to us, but obviously not in every case. Sorry, that was proactive. Reactive in the sense that we don't approach anyone to stock our brand. We want people to reach out to us and tell us why they would be a good stockist for Ironheart. Yeah, that's pretty much the answer to that. But again, we're not looking for anyone new right now, so yeah. That makes it really, really easy because we don't have to do either.
Yeah, nice. I mean, one of the cool things about retailers is that they do reach out to you, and if they give you enough notice, you can do something cool with them, a nice collab, you know. But you need time, especially with the way the production is working at the moment. But those kind of individual items are always great. Like, you know, one of the obvious ones is Kia with the 633, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of brands do collaborations. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that this is like a special Ironheart thing. But I do think what I kind of talked about at the start of this conversation about having good relationships with our retailers, maintaining those relationships, etc., that does make us an easier brand to potentially collaborate with, because we will do something just to try and support the shop that we're collaborating with, rather than for a commercial gain. So we want to do whatever we can to shine a spotlight on new accounts when they open, on older accounts that have been doing great stuff for a long time, whatever. So if we can come up with a cool concept for that and we can do some joint promotion of that, then that's a win-win, right? It just makes it so easy. So yeah, I mean, Kia and Self Edge have some exclusive cuts, which they've been doing for a long, long time. That is a really, really hard thing to work on. It's not something that we're necessarily looking to start developing like another 10 cuts with different retailers around the world. Kia's been an Ironheart retailer for the same length of time that Ironheart International has been wholesaling Ironheart, basically. So he benefited from the fact that there were fewer cuts around when he started, so he saw gaps in the line that he wanted to try and fill, and that was an easy win for both sides. And we've also benefited greatly from all the work that he's put into promoting the brand and stuff like we do from all of our retailers around the world. So it's a symbiotic thing. But now we have a very solid line of cuts. Kia has his 633, which is a good example of something that's not necessarily serviced by our line. But there's not a lot of different directions to go cut-wise without getting a bit too far away from where we're comfortable as a brand. Like, I guess we could make a drain pipe. That's not something that's serviced by any of our cuts, but that's not really on brand either. So that's not something we're going to be looking at doing, right? So that's kind of where we are with cuts, but yeah.
Okay, so this is the end of season three, dude. It's been a long one for some reason. I think maybe just because I've been in LA recording it and I've been going to see so many people. It's been so fun to just meet all these different kinds of people. But looking over the last three seasons, has there been any like moments that have kind of stood out for you?
Oh, that is a good question. I love recording the first episode. Well, what was episode two? But the first episode that you and I did together, that was really fun.
Yeah.
I wish we could have done this one in person.
Same.
I really enjoyed the Kate Hafstad episode and also meeting her in London shortly after you guys recorded. That was cool. Someone that I've heard of a lot, but never kind of interacted with at all. But we share a lot of things that we both kind of believe in and stuff, around sustainability and stuff. So it was really cool to meet up with her in London, go for a drink and talk about that sort of stuff. And it's also just been pretty cool to see the caliber of guest shift a little bit, and how the podcast has developed over time as well has been pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a good one. I think it's been, I've loved like every single one for many different reasons. I think there was a gear shift for season two for me personally, because it just felt like I was, you know, me and my wife now were kind of seeing each other long distance. So I was recording some of them in Boston and some of them from my place in by the ocean. And, you know, like it's always been such a fun thing. And even moving back to the very beginning conversation, you and Giles pulled me into, what was it, Unit 21 at the time?
We've been 22. Or 20, like, I always got the fucking numbers confused. It definitely wasn't 21. It would have been one of the other ones.
One of the other ones, yeah. And it was just, I remember the conversation, just like, hey, so we want to do a podcast and we think you'd be great to do it. And I remember just going like, having no idea, like, okay, I know I've got some audio experience, but just the fact that you two had a hunch and put this faith in me to do it, and how supportive you've been, and you guys emailing all the guys that you know in the scene, and you know, it's just been such a cool thing to be a part of and to watch grow, you know. So I've loved it, absolutely, man. So in that vein, if you want to reach out to me, let's say my work email is it's hello@highkickmedia.com. If you want to request any guests, you can email me directly. Or what's another great email for people to contact you or anyone else?
Yeah, shop@ironheart.co.uk. But yeah, I would say that it's better to email you with guest recommendations if people are comfortable doing that. Yeah. Because it would be cool to get some great people on for season four. We want to keep doing this as long as people are interested in listening. And based on the feedback that we've been seeing on the forum, and I know you've been getting directly, it seems like people are very much still interested. So any suggestions for other guests, contact me or Ollie.
Yeah, and we'd love to make it happen. There may be a little bit of a break now because Christmas and everything, but yeah, we'll pick it up in 2024, I'm sure. Dude, anything to look forward to? Oh, actually, where are you going to be at Christmas?
I'll be back in Gosport for Christmas, which will be nice.
Oh, no.
Serena and her family are coming over from Japan. So that'll be very cool. We'll be with Dad and Paula and the four, Serena and co. I can't remember their surname. I can remember her maiden name, but I forget her married surname. Right. Anyway, them and me and Kira. It'll be very nice.
That'll be really nice. And then
Big thing to look forward to in the new year is the Ironheart gym, which should have been built today, but they forgot to deliver the main thing.
What the fuck? Wait, we should have started the conversation with this. So an Ironheart.
That's why I was late. I was late for this call because I was trying to set up the Watt bike, which is like a bike. but I forgot to take shorts over. I'm wearing my jeans, which are a bit too tight to cycle in. So luckily there's no cameras in there. Setting up the pedals in my fucking pants or underpants to Americans, trying to get the saddle height right and get the Watt bike started.
but wait a second, but you got to explain to me. So when I was at Ironheart in Gosport, there used to be a place, what was it called? Harbour Fitness? Is that right?
Yeah, Marina Fitness was a really, really cool gym. It's literally just behind where I'm sitting now. Oh, it's not. It's actually to my right. And they went bust, sadly.
Oh, my God. I didn't know.
Yeah, mate. So they went bust and no one took... So that unit is for sale, but not as a gym. So all the gym equipment got taken away by the owners. And they're trying... Like, the owner of the actual freehold, I guess, is trying to sell the building or whatever. Anyway, the remaining gyms in Gosport are a bit not that nice, often a bit too busy.
Dog shit?
Yeah, you could say dog shit, yeah. and I feel like, I don't know, obviously exercise is good for you. It's hard to kind of say this without sounding preachy, but like I feel like there's good correlation between a workforce that has, that maybe takes better care of themselves than one that does not, right? Whether that be not smoking instead of smoking, or not drinking Coke and drinking water instead, or whatever. Like, there are a lot of different studies and whatever that you can really improve the happiness and the longevity of your workforce by making small changes. I just thought, like, I guess it kind of stemmed as a selfish thing, which was like, I really hate the gym that I'm not going to say by name that's in Gosport. It's full of dicks, and I can never use the equipment I want to use. Like, it'd be quite nice to have our own. And then I was like, well, if we're going to have our own, we may as well do it right. All the staff who want to use it, like, I can't do it for free because I put a lot of money into it, but it will be a very affordable rate for the staff. We may rent it out to some local PTs by the hour just to top up the overheads. Obviously, it's a rented unit. We've got to pay for the electricity and all that stuff, cleaning, plus all the gear that's gone in. But just having that kind of on-site, it's literally just over there, which means something to you, but maybe a 3-minute walk from the office or a 30-second walk from the flat.
I'm trying to picture where
it is. It's the other side of the car park outside the... Like, if you're on the balcony of the flat, looking at the car park is the other side of the car park. So I got on the far side. Much directly opposite the balcony.
Nice.
So we've got a bike, we've got a ski erg, we've got the monster rack system.
What's the monster rack system?
Stupid name. So it basically is a squat rack, a Smith machine, a dual cable pulley system, dips, dip bars, pull up bars, and a landmine press all in one big rack system, basically. So it takes up like if you search like primal monster rack, you'll see what I mean. So it's basically like an all-in-one
Rogue thing. Comes up. Oh, there you go. Primal. There it is. Dude, sick.
And then we've got a heavy bag hanging in one corner for some boxing. Johnny, our photographer, is big into kickboxing. And his girlfriend is... a trainer. She's offered to do some kind of boxing and kickboxing one-to-ones with some of the guys who are interested in that sort of stuff. And then we got like a load of kettlebells, slam balls, wall balls, the plyo boxes, like kind of more functional stuff.
Nice.
And it's in like a 40 square meter room. It's big enough for two or three people to be in there doing their own things. So before work, after work, whatever. And then yeah, should be good. But the monster rack, which is the main thing, didn't come today. So they've installed like the floor matting and a load of other things like kettlebells or whatever. But they sent an assembly team to not assemble the main thing that required assembly, which is quite annoying. So hopefully that's coming Saturday. it's all painted. We've got some mirrors on two walls. We're going to throw up a nice Ironheart mural on one thing. Need Wi-Fi in there and a good Sonos system, and then we're good to go.
Sick.
Should be good to go for Jan 1st. I mean, obviously everyone's New Year's resolution is, oh, I want to lose weight or whatever because Christmas. And that is yet another great reason why having your own gym is better than going to commercial ones, because the gym is fucking heaving on January 1st or 2nd or whatever for the first month or so, and everyone's in there like, making their new resolutions that they then break within 2 or 3 weeks, and then it goes back to normal in February. But yeah, Ironheart Gym should be operational by Christmas.
Sick. Well, we're recording this episode on the 13th of December, 2023.
It'll go out. Shows you how good my date knowledge is. I said it was the 11th earlier.
Did you really? Good memory, though.
Yeah. Literally just lost two days of my life.
Terrible awareness.
pretty awful.
We're recording this on the 13th of December. I'm going to turn this around quick, and it's going to go out on the 15th of December. But at some point, we'll put some photos of the gym up on the forum or something then, yeah?
I've deliberately not not been posting because I want to post like before, during, after, when it's all done. So as soon as this last thing comes over the weekend, hopefully, next time I'm down, which is going to be Tuesday or Wednesday next week, I'll be in there tinkering, making sure everything's good to go. And then, yeah, we need a mural on the wall before it's the full reveal. But another reason to come and visit Ironheart and Gosport. You can get a quick workout in and then buy your favorite jeans.
Yes. All right, let's wrap this up. Al, it's always good to talk with you. I can't wait to do this properly in person with muchos wine.
Yeah, mate. It'd be nice.
Yeah, have a bit of a life debrief, maybe.
I think that's definitely needed. Sooner than later.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be home at the start of next year for sure. Well, let's say a big Merry Christmas to you all. I hope you have fantastic days, New Year's Eves and everything else. And we'll touch back in the new year. Anything you want to say to the guys, Al?
Just echo what you've said. Happy holidays, as they say in America. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Keep enjoying.
You've been listening to Ironcast, the official Ironheart International podcast. A big thank you to Alex Padmore. Ironcast is an island-to-island production in association with iKick Media, hosted and edited by me, Ollie Walker. We hope you enjoyed listening, and we'll see you next season. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Take care.
以上です。